Blog Talk Radio.
Oh man, why am I hearing an echo? All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mason. Somebody has a monitor on, and it's really, really bad. If they can mute that, it's really bad. But anyway, we're going to be here. We're going to work through this. And it is, man, it's horrible. But anyway, we'll try to see if we can get through this. Good God, that is horrible. All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mason. All right. We're going to get into an interesting topic today. You know, Isidoro Rodriguez, our co-host and star on Behind the Blue Curtain, and I can still hear my echo, so that tells me somebody's got a monitor running. You know, Isidoro Rodriguez, our co-host, and I can hear it. Anyway, let's go ahead and get into the show and say good morning to everybody. Appreciate them being here. What's up, Big John?
Good morning,
everybody. How you doing? Hey, good morning,
everybody.
Another great show
behind the blue curtain.
What's up, Big John?
Let's get it started.
All right, Big Joe, what's going on, bro?
Looking forward to another great show behind the blue curtain.
All right, bro. Man, I don't know where that echo is coming from, but it is bad. All right, let me see something. Let me try something over here, because I'm pretty sure it's not here. I don't know where that is coming from, but it's not coming from here. Man, that's bad. It's something every week. I swear to God. You know, it never fails. Anyway, good morning, Izzy. What's going on, bro? All right, let's go up and talk to the big chief. What's up, chief?
I'm good. We get to hear the show twice, so
absolutely mind-blowing. Well, I think we may have gotten this figured out here. I don't know. But that was crazy. You guys can hear me okay right now?
Yeah.
Good. Well, we're back to normal. Thank God. Anyway, let's get into Big Joe. What's up?
Not a mooch. Just waiting to jump on Izzy's article. I thought it was more than interesting. A lot of stuff we talked about, I agree with.
No, Izzy's article, and you know, I've done one, what, two, one? I've done two? Okay. I mean, Izzy's articles are law. But the thing is with them, you know, they're very informative. And they give people a lot of information that they need to have. You know, because I think we have a lot of people out here, when we talk about police reform, it transcends just policing. It really goes out into community. I mean, what have we talked about on this show? Voting, jury duty, policing your own community, not with a gun and locking people up, but just being in the community and making a change. So, you know, I went out and got some guests that are going to come on and interact with this, so that people can see that on this show, we're not afraid to reach out and bring other people in and include them in what we do. Because what we do is what they do. And, you know, I feel like until we do that and listen to the community, we're not going to get police reform. It's got to come from the top down. And no offense, Chief, and you and I have had this conversation, you know what I'm going to say. When people get to the police chief and they go, that's it, we're going to get it, that ain't it. City managers, city council people, mayors, special interest people, it trickles all the way down. Judges. So that I wanted to go there today, and I got two brothers on here, and hoping Lilu can remember to get in here and join us. But, you know, first one I got to go to, Marcus Jones. Marcus, tell us about Rebuke, what you do. Bro, we appreciate having you here. We're glad you showed up. What's up with you? You're still muted, bro.
There you go.
Yeah, we got you.
Great. Thank you for inviting me on the show, Sam. You know, my name is Marcus Jones. Again, I am the founder of Rebuke Podcast, which stands for Reestablishing Black Unity, Knowledge, Education, and Economics. So basically, we focus on those key issues within the black community by bringing specialists on the show. I range from sex trafficking, from bullying, and child molestation, and I don't just talk about it. I bring guests that are experienced about this stuff, about the show, and to provide solutions. So, once again, I thank you, Sam, for inviting me on the show, and hopefully we can get some solutions to the policing in America.
You know, bro, you invited me on your show a couple months ago, and That you know, that's real. Real recognized is real. And for you to bring me there where I understand I can be divisive or whatever, not nearly to the level Joe is. Joe is like staying on steroids. But Joe and I are aligned. And then Izzy becomes that underline slash score slash italicized print. But, you know, you invited me there, and I appreciate you, bro. And, you know, I'm going to reciprocate, you know. Because you had me there, I'm going to have you here. So I appreciate you being here, bro. All right. Now I got to go down to the man. This is my homeboy. We grew up together, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The OG. First time he came, you know, he did a phenomenal thing. And we're going to give him a minute before we get into this to talk about what he did. Because I think that what OG, I call him OG, all of us in Harrisburg, what's up, Berg? You know, that's how we know him. OG, Cal Holman, he did something that was truly amazing, so I want him to take a minute, highlight what he did. And also, Cal, you got an award recently. I want you to talk about that, and then we're going to go into it.
Is it my key?
Yeah, bro, that's you.
Okay, cool. All right, well, so I got to do this right in the morning, okay? Good. Yeah, my name is Cal Holman, and my name is Calvin. But what I do and what I did was, for the people that don't know, was I stuck with a longtime childhood friend that was sentenced to life without parole for drug charges. It took us 14 years of letter writing and 7-minute phone calls of us two communicating to reach the point where he came home, where he got out. He was set up by dirty cops, you know, and you know, through the long journey he got out, you know. So with that being said, I was awarded last Saturday, not only for that, but for my mentorship that I do with the young adults, like 21 to 33 is the oldest one, that these young adults are people that are active, still doing crimes, and still, you know, got cases. And these are the ones that end up locked up, done killed somebody or whatever, and didn't say, if I had somebody to talk to, I'm that guy. Because I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to keep your story and put you on Facebook and let everybody see what's going on, you know what I mean, with you. There's even adults need somebody to talk to that they just can't tell everybody everything, you know what I'm saying? And I done had something come to me with some major problems, and I just, you know, you just got to have somewhere for them to go and give them some kind of guidance, because that next move might be deadly. You know what I mean? I had a dude that just wanted to turn a gun in because it was having that turn in gun. And I was kind of upset because he wanted me to take the gun. I'm a felon, though. I told him, I'm a felon. I can't handle them. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Mm-hmm. I can't say I'm doing a favor for you, coming from one town to another, transporting that gun, and I get caught with it or whatever. But what I was upset about is for the simple fact that I need to have an answer for that dude. Or for anybody to come to me, I got to make sure that I got an answer for him, because it might only be a one-time deal. You know what I'm saying? I might not get another chance. He might not feel like turning it in again. It might do a crime with it. You know what I mean? And then I know that he tried to turn it in, and I didn't have nothing for him. So I'm working on that with the people here in Harrisburg and whatnot, that guide me on that just in case I had that come up again.
You know, bro, now you said, before we get to Izzy, you said a key term that I really want to set the tone of this conversation on. So the people listening, Waco, ATL, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and across the world, so that people don't take what we're doing here out of context. Now, you used the term cops.
Right.
And I just got off the phone less than 30 minutes ago with Joe. And Joe and I talked about and have continued specifically about that term. But you knew something that only Joe and the chief and John and maybe Izzy and Marcus will really click into. There's a difference between cops and police officers. Now, give me your definition of what you see the difference as.
Oh, hell yeah. There's a difference between it, man. Just like there's a difference between street guys and snitches. It's the same thing with the cops, because I look at it like this. A cop, a pig, a one-time. A police officer and an officer of the law. It's different things. You know what I mean? Like you saying, you're an officer of the law. You're a good dude, man, and you're a good officer. But you get bad rep behind cops that want to be street dudes and cops at the same time. It's like the people that want to be in the streets and want to be snitches. So you want to be the law and you want to sell drugs. Come on, man. You want to be in the street. You want to be up. Because I had an oath to the street. I had to follow rules and all that kind of stuff like that. Just like y'all swear to take a, you know, swear to take a oath to protect and serve. Mm-hmm. But you just can't serve. You got to protect too. You know what I'm saying? And what happened is like what happened to my homie that they put away, man. Those were cops that was in that was involved in that, man. They put the whole thing up. You know what I mean? Put him away, and it was okay to put this man away for it until he died. And we knew they were dirty. The guy was the cop was a daggone crack ass. But they were still letting him work, you know what I'm saying? So the difference that we street guys and old street dudes use is cops and guys that wanna be still in the street, they want their hand in it. You know, they still wanna be doing the work. But they just got a badge and a gun, and I think that's real whack, man, because if that's what you want to do, then you might as well stay in the streets, man, because you ain't going up but making people's lives miserable. Because along the way, you just going to, everything you touch is going to be dirt. So that's why I say there's a difference between cops and police officers and officers of the law, because police officers are necessary. People can talk all that shit they want about, we don't like cops, I don't like cops. But let somebody run up in your crib or take something of yours, you're going to need one. So we all need them, so we can... You can talk bad about them and whatever the case may be, but we need these officers, and they get bad rap. The good ones are, or the stuff that the bad guys are doing. You know what I mean?
All right, bro. Appreciate you. Before I go to Izzy, let me go Big John. What's up, bro?
Yeah, I mean, he said a mouthful, man. You know, there's a lot of dudes who play, they want to play two sides. And you can't. When I went to trial stand, I looked at a dude that's testifying against me who I know done some serious dirt. But here I am, I was offered 120 years.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there And I'm looking at him, and I said to my one of my co-leads that was on trial with me, yo, this dude's a genius. He said, what do you mean by that? He's telling on us. I said, yeah. I said, he's telling on us knowing that we know all the dirt that he's done, but he knows how that I'm built, that I won't do to him what he's doing to me, regardless of what the end result is. So you have dudes like the OG who's going to ride out whatever he got facing. He's not going to try to play both sides. You know, it's just one way. If you in the streets, it's gangster. And you deal with it like a gangster. But then you got people that try to play both sides, and you will find police officers and cops doing the same thing.
Right.
So, and I'm going to say this, because I think I had this conversation with Joe Mosley one day, and I said, sadly, that the average dude in the street don't know what a snitch is, and they will put that title on someone and just throw it out there. We from the era, OG, we from the streets. I don't know Brother Marcus yet, but we from the streets where if you label somebody, you have to be able to pull that paperwork out and prove what you're saying. Brother Marcus, you relate to what I'm saying, brother?
Unfortunately, brother, I'm an army brat, so I'm not from the streets.
Okay.
So. But you know, because I'm not going to, you know, procrastinate or fake the funk. I'm not from the streets. I'm a first sergeant son. So yes, sir. No, sir. It's in that black boot in your ass. So I'm sorry.
What I want to share, though, is let's just take Cal out. She may not never sold. She never did drugs. Never sold drugs. She's not bootlegging. She's not running a legal card game. And if you commit a murder in front of her and she calls the police, she's not a snitch.
Mm-hmm.
Don't label that woman a snitch. She's a citizen. And when you see people, even, yo, listen, you take the mob will tell you straight out, you left a civilian. You left a witness. They never said you left a rat. You left a snitch. But someone who's in that life, and you leave that person alive, they say, well, you left this rat, this turncoat, this snitch. They would give you all the terminology. Us as black folks, we want to label Miss Jones, who ain't never sold no drugs, who never gambled, who never did none of that. We want to label this man's aunt or mother a rat, and that's wrong.
John, let me do this, bro, because you
of what a officer and a cop is a clear definition of what a snitch is. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, most people don't know the difference.
Now, John, we're going to get people going to hear this later, and they're going to hear you talking, and somebody say, I agree, I disagree, oh, man, he don't know what's up. You know, John, you got a hell of a biography, bro. And you're qualified to say what you're saying, much as OG is. I don't bring people here that don't know what they're talking about. Take a minute, John, and have whatever detail you want to give. But to the people, first-time listeners, people that are tuning in, who are hearing what you're saying, qualify yourself and let them know why you're qualified to speak on what you speak on.
Okay. My brothers and I started a drug organization back in the 80s, which me and one of my younger brothers were the head of, and then the rest of my brothers and my team was part of. I also was one of the co-founders of one of the first black gangs in Connecticut, which eventually went to Massachusetts and New York. I did 24 and a half black years inside and prison institution where I broke rules and I created all types of law for convicts. And I can tell people, man, some things about the prison like that. They don't even realize, like, I begin to understand why they allowed us to formulate. Because in a warden's mind, in those days, it was easier to control, let's say, 10 leaders from this game, 5 leaders from this game, 10 from that one, than it is to try to control 3,000 or 4,000 inmates. So as long as we have control of those inmates, they allowed us to formulate because they thought that that would help make prison life easier for them. But what happened was the gangs began to realize how much power we had inside prisons, and then we began to kind of like bully the police and bully other inmates, and that's where the problem, where the gang stuff got out of hand at. But, yeah, I've been through all of that, man. You know, if a dude wants to sit down and share his story, I'm willing to listen. But I can tell you what's real and what's fake. You can't tell me anything, and I'm going to go for it because I've been through it. And, you know, unfortunately, I left a legacy that I'm not proud of in the streets to the big. But people will tell you that I'm respected in the streets and I'm respected in the big. And when I went through my transition of changing my life, most of the dudes that was in other gangs, I got them out of those gangs so that they can become Muslim or they went on to be Christians or just enjoy regular life in the population, because I was respected as a gang leader and even more respected when I became the head of the Nation of Islam inside the prison system. So, yeah, I've been through it, man, and I'm still active at what I do. So I try to help young men out and help them design a plan for themselves, where they see themselves in 3 years, where they see themselves in 5 and 10, and help them put together an action plan and go from there. So although Brother Marcus is not from the streets, I love what he said that he's doing, and we all in this together, man. You know, it's not about street credibility or whatever, but when it comes down to it, I know Brother OG can speak, and I listened to him, and I said, okay, he's a real deal. I know where I'm from, and I don't have to, there's books about it that I haven't written. Other people written, including John Walsh from America's Most Wanted. He wrote a chapter with me in it and so on. So I don't have to justify what I'm saying here today. People that want to challenge it, that's their subject.
Tell them, call in, John, 646-716-4621. They can press 1. That's how we deal with it here, because we don't hide and we don't run from nobody. I see a caller up there with all ones, and that's cool. I don't have a problem with that. If you want to ask a question, you got to press 1 on your phone, so I know you want to ask a question. We'll get you in. Let me go over to our resident chief up in the house, Chief Devlin. What's going on, bro?
Hey, man, how are you?
We're good.
Yeah, good to be here. I agree with the context, the cop and police officer or law enforcement officer. You can't be both sides. You can't be there. I mean, you got to be one or the other. From my perspective, there's only one side you can be on. And I'm sure Joe will agree with me. So if you're on the other side, if you try to play dirty and two-faced, your errand's got to go. Because you're screwing the mission of what we're trying to do, right? Trying to make it right, trying to make communities correct. And we can't have that. We need to... I'm sure we won't get into it. I read his article several times, and those folks got to go because they create a hindrance. They give me a headache. They make my blood pressure go up, and they piss me off more than anybody does. I'll just flat out say it. But that's boss, you know. That's my job. I got to get rid of them, take care of business, and make sure that we're guardians for our community. That's the whole idea behind this. Is that we need to go away from. Whatever it is, a lot of these places are doing. And after Izzy's article, he's not beside himself after the things he's seen in his reporting career. But some of the stuff he wrote about in that one specific article blows my mind. Of some of the things that agencies are not doing that we have been doing for decades. So anyway, with that, I'm excited getting this topic. I'm excited about this panel. And get into the crux of this thing, man.
Okay, let me grab a caller real quick before we get to Izzy to open us up and get us rolling. The caller is showing all ones on the screen.
Yeah, it's me. I hear you. You hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, good. Are you guys on the job or are you ex-cops?
I did 25 years, Joe.
Back on the job. Did 32 and back on.
Okay. I'm here because the title of the show, Can U.S. Policing Be Saved? So I'm glad it's about cops. I wouldn't know just by the title itself. It was about the war in the Middle East or foreign affairs. But right now, I don't know if you guys know it, but the responsibility of saving America lies on your shoulders. I don't know if you're Trump supporters, if you're on the left, on the right, independent, conservatives, etc. But right now, America's undergoing a cancel culture, and it will come to a boiling point pretty soon in the next couple of years at the most. In order to stop that, the cops have to get together and realize that the people that they're supposed to serve is us, but the people that really do serve are the ones that write their checks. And the people that wrote your, not your checks, but the other checks of the cops in Portland, Seattle, New York, and Los Angeles, those governors and mayors, they should be run out of town with tarred and feathered because they allowed you guys, your brethren, to give up the ghost. They told the cops to stand down, to let the precincts burn, to let Black Lives Matter and Antifa burn down buildings with impunity. The only people who are going to stop it are going to be you guys. Do you agree with me or not?
I'll insert this before I go to Joe. I'll insert this part in it. I agree with a lot of what you said. But when we say that Black Lives Matter burnt down the buildings, I have to pause on that because I saw some of those buildings burn, and I saw the people setting them on fire, that police precinct, as well as several patrol cars, and they weren't black.
No, they were white.
Let me finish. And they didn't have anything on that said Black Lives Matter. Okay, and for the record, I am not about Black Lives Matter, the organization. I am supportive of Black Lives Matter, the movement. And I find it, you know, and brother, I appreciate you calling. We're going to leave you on. We don't cut nobody off. But you know what? And I agree. But I noticed in talking about policing and the destruction and that's going on, and I 1,000% on point with you, you left out January 6th.
Well, left out who?
January 6th.
Oh, January 6th. Well, I can address both. I can address both Black Lives Matter and Antifa and the supposed insurrection. Okay. When you're finished, I guess, with the next call, if you want to come back to me, I'll be glad to do it.
Yeah, bro, we'll please hang on, and if you need to, just mute your phone if you got to move around or anything. But, yeah, you know, you're on, bro. Once you call in here, you're in the discussion. You know, just mute your phone, and you know, if you want to get in, just say something, and I'll hear you. And that way, in case you got to move around. I appreciate you, but hang on. Izzy, the man of the moment. Brother, come on, introduce yourself and say what led to that beautiful article that you wrote, and take the floor.
I mean, I don't know about beautiful. It's definitely long and informative. But Isidore Rodriguez. I've been a criminal justice journalist for about 6 years, primarily focusing on policing. And this was the third article in a series on policing. Because I started working on last year when the George Floyd incident happened. And I just kind of wanted to get a bead on what the experts were saying, what people at skin in the game were saying, and kind of wanted to start a conversation about the intricacies of policing that the general population and the general conversation doesn't seem to be including, which is why the articles are all very long and detailed. And this last one was... I mean, the first two had to focus on race and racism and policing. They kind of focused primarily on the struggles and difficulties that Black police officers face on a daily basis, and then what is being done to kind of improve their experience. And then the last one was to kind of acknowledge the other side of the argument, because there is a large group of people that are
talking about the evolution of policing, and changing policing, and shrinking policing, and their role in society. And I wanted to give them a chance to have a voice and then talk to other experts in policing to see what they say about it. But this last one, yeah, it's really all about defining what policing is, defining what it's supposed to be, and what it is needs to evolve into to better represent and better protect and serve the society of today. And it does need to evolve. It does need to change. I think I went over in a good amount of detail about some of the things that need to be done and are being done to do that.
All right, brother. I appreciate it. Can you, if you would, now you sit down and you write this article, and you had to have a format to iron out something. Okay, where do I want to go with this? And you spoke with several police officers, some key, very key people, and some who aren't police officers but have in-depth knowledge on policing. How open do you think in the article, which I do have, I will post it in this show, but it's on my Facebook, and you guys, you can go to my Facebook's 100% transparent. You can go there and view anything that we do. It's been that way since I was in Waco, Texas, and started with all the complaints. I left it that way, so nobody can say I'm hiding anything. You can go read Isidore's article, and it is provocative, but it asks questions like we do on this show that sometimes the least of us are asking the same questions, but those questions never make it to the microphone. But when you sat down and ironed out how you wanted to go with this, and then you got these high-profile people, do you think were they being transparent with you? Is do you think they were shading some corners, or how did they come off to you?
I mean, in my experience, most of the people I talk to are always open to talking. I haven't spoken to anybody yet in my entire, I guess I can call it career now, it's in anybody who hasn't wanted to speak or has hidden anything from me, other than, I mean, it's very hard to get representatives from major police departments to speak. But no, I don't think anybody was hiding anything. I think in general, one of the things that I found that was very, gave me a little bit of optimism was the fact that if you reach out to these people and you try and have a conversation,
no, I don't want to have a conversation. Hiding anything.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, they all wanted to talk. They were all very open. One of the things that I always find interesting is when I talk to police leadership and then I talk to former officers and current officers on the ground is that whole top-down or bottom-up conversation. I find it very interesting that the politicians and police leaders are all like, oh, we need to fix this from the bottom up. That's how we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the people who are on the bottom say, we need to fix this from the top down. That's how we're going to do it. And I'm always like, you guys need to get together and just do both, because you could meet in the middle and do both, and we could probably gain some ground. But I think in general, everybody's very open and having a conversation. If you come at people with a kind of already, if you come at people trying to fight, if you come at people yelling, which is part of the reason why I did the articles, is because I was very frustrated by a lot of the conversations that were happening in major media. It's a lot of people yelling at each other. It's a lot of people who are very emotional and passionate. And emotion and passion is good to a certain degree, but also the more emotional, the more passionate you are, the less logical, the less reasonable you're going to be. And so I got really frustrated with a lot of the narratives that were going around about policing. And I mean, it just started being too black and white. It started being too cut and dry. I got really frustrated, and I still am frustrated, when I hear about all the people that are literally talking about abolishing the police, which I think is a completely unconstructive narrative and ridiculous. And then those same people are like out in the street yelling abolish the police, and they're like, I don't understand why these guys are mad. Like, what are you talking about? Why would you abolish the police? That's not a conducive, constructive way of improving anything. I mean, everybody's open to having a conversation. My experience is, well, you're willing to have the conversation with people who you might not agree with.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several people in the article that I didn't entirely agree with, but their voice needs to be heard, because in order for this to improve, we need to have these conversations with a diverse group of people. That's the only way we're going to move forward. You can't have improvement or evolution if all you're doing is having one-on-one conversations with people who sound exactly like you. So, yeah.
No, you know, bro, I agree with you. Let me go before I go to Marcus. Big jump. I know you're chopping at the bit. Come on, bro.
Well, I got to thank Izzy for the article. But I want to go address something the caller said. It's very interesting, his take, because it's kind of point speaking, and he fails to recognize how did we get to that point of the riots.
Mm-hmm.
Those were police actions
mm-hmm.
that caused those mm-hmm. riots. Those were not the people rising up out of nowhere. It was people rising up in response to bad policing. Something that me and John talk about, and I give this to Brother Cal and even to Marcus. I agree wholeheartedly. There's a difference between policemen, cops, or whatever else. But let me just say this to you. They have no place in my world. You need to pick a side and stick to it. But I will say this. I have more respect for those of that call themselves gang members than those who say they're the police and want to be gang members. So in that vein, as crazy as some, I have a lot of respect for you guys because we need you to admit to what you are.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just get that
mm-hmm.
out of the way. In Isidore's article, Mr. Wordy himself, one of the things that we've talked about on this show, and I want everyone to be clear, the problem is not if you've been in this business, as we have,
mm-hmm.
the problem is not patrolling. The problem is leadership. Because leadership will tell you one thing and do something else. They'll lay the blame at the feet of patrolmen because patrolmen can't fight back, believe it or not. You may not like that, but it's the truth. See, because once they get to a certain level of leadership, they become politicians. Not all of them. I mean, we can take Jim Dolan as the quintessential of what they should be, but there ain't a lot of Jim Dolans.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to the article, again, in mind, even what I'm doing now, I have a problem with management because the people that we should be getting rid of, we're not. The people we should be holding up, we're not, because it's not conducive to the argument for someone else's political agenda. I've got a whole team of people that are out today doing community stuff that the administration told me to get rid of. But now because we're giving grants, we'll talk about it at some other point. If you look at the grants, what are the grants now saying? We want community police. Now, 10 years ago, community police was an unfunded mandate. Now, so let's get out dirty here. Now, all of a sudden, it's a great idea. Well, what happened for 10 years?
That part.
I didn't mean to rant.
No, bro. You're hitting
it. You're wrong.
Come on, Marcus.
I'm just, come on, Marcus. What happened to the 80s? Doing a crack epidemic, but that's another topic. Let's go.
Yeah, I agree with Joe, the unfunded mandate. I mean, I spend more money in the line item budget for community policing events. I never got a grant. And unfortunately, I can't get a grant because my crime rate's not high. So, I mean, again, it's screwed up. But in order to engage the community, National Night Out, Coffee the Cop, the events where we're out there meeting one-on-one with folks, that's me. A lot of it's not even funded. I just don't do it. With my people, and they show up on the street. So, you know, it's a balance of importance. Do you want to get that done? Meet with the community and listen to them. And I'll challenge any department anywhere that may be listening. It can be done without a grant. Joe, I mean, would you agree?
Oh, totally.
Community policing. And I said this, I think, a few shows ago. I mean, we teach in the state of Texas basic patrol operations. There's a slide in there. Every officer is a community police officer. I don't have to have a special unit to be a community police officer. Everyone in the uniform is already a community police officer. That's what you should be doing. So I'm going to shut up my
radio. You know,
the problem that, I mean, I've observed is that too often community policing is a buzzword. It's like they roll it out every time something bad happens.
Yep.
Like, oh, we're going to launch a community policing program. And it always happens. The surge for community policing happened in the 90s, happened in the 80s. They keep rolling it out. And the problem is that it's community policing. They don't put any money behind it.
That's right.
And they don't put any commitment behind it. They just say what they need to say to get the heat off of them, and then they let the program die.
And what you end up with, what you end up with is a crime prevention program that too many police departments are selling the crime prevention program as community policing. And we're in my wheelhouse now, but go ahead, Chief.
Well, I'm going to say it's more of the commitment than the funding.
Exactly.
I've never been funded. It's just something that we did. So, I mean, again, I'm not Chicago PD. I mean, I would love to be Chicago PD. I'd love to have their
budget.
Well, I'd like to have their money. They got more budgetary money.
But you know what, Chief? Right. But that goes back to a problem. You know, when you have a community such as yours, that is a diverse community where people keep their crime rates down. From an economic perspective, from the federal government, you're punished by not having access to. But, you know, and when I would go into neighborhoods as a community police officer, there are three types of neighborhoods, and this reflects the cities or vast portions of most cities. You have your protected zone, which is your gated communities, your wealthier people. You have your transitional neighborhood or a section of town, which is your middle class. We're holding on. We can see the gated community, the protected zone, but we also see what is called the lost zone. The lost zone is where we continually dump hundreds of thousands of dollars down a drain without a viable, workable solution and commitment, not just from the city or the stakeholders, but from the citizens. So, you know, we dump that money in there. We punish communities like yours. And when I hear community policing, anytime I hear that term, and when I did it in Waco, Claire Cork set it up. I went to a lot of schools, and she had it set up, and she did a lot of education for us. But for me, it was just a natural fit for Stan. But I think that community policing failed because it never transitioned from the chief, where it was designed to go and written in the policy that it would go, down to the janitor, to the ladies at the front desk that greet the customers, to the detectives, to the SWAT team. It has to be encompassing. And I think when we use this term, that community policing, the new buzzword, Izzy is 1,000% right. When I hear that term, I have to say, who were the first people doing community policing? It was black officers who they got hired because there was no choice but to hire them. Maybe they got a nightstick, maybe they didn't. But they got sent into the black community where they lived with no backup or very little if any would come. And they survived and thrived and were a pillar in that community. Why? Because they lived there. The people respected them. The people understood them. But these officers were transparent. And they had to battle two things.
You're right. I mean, we are punished. So the agencies that are doing it and have been doing it on their own are punished because we do not qualify for the federal grant based on crime rate.
Mm-hmm.
I have not, in my community, in the 12 years I've been here, I have not received a dime from the federal government. And it's all, I always get the, hey, man, that's a great idea. I love that. It's a great program.
But
we need to put it over here. And I get it. There are agencies that are really hurting that do need people and they do need their programs up and running. But it kind of stinks sometimes when you have a great idea and you want to try to get it funded. So, but you know, it's more about that commitment. And you are 100% correct. It's top down. The chief has got to be the one that pushes it. It's got to go from the top level down. I tell my people, this is what we're going to do. And, you know, that's just the way that it is. I mean, and it can be done in every single stinking law enforcement agency in this country.
Right.
If they want to do it.
And not to say your department is this way, but I'm going to blame policing for some of that, too, because I'm going to say this. It has been a sell your soul to the devil deal. Okay, because the federal government has come in and offered these grant programs, not all of them, but some of them. And more likely, state governments have come in and offered more of these plans. The bigger problem, not the federal, let's just go state right now. Let's talk about Texas. Speed Step, DWI Step, you know, all these programs, and we're going to pay the overtime for these officers to go out and write X amount of tickets. Now, the city wins. Why? Because who gets the money for the tickets? The city does. The state wins because why? They get to say, look how much money we gave, say, Waco to do this and this and this and this. Who screwed at the end of it? The citizens are, because it's policing based upon statistics, because when you do these step grants, when the city signs on and sells to the soul, we're going to take this step program and we're going to do this. It is based upon statistics. You must write X amount of tickets or get X amount of warnings or have X amount of stops. That is true.
That's true, and you actually would be surprised about the amount of money that goes in the municipalities for the citation for the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
You would be surprised at the breakdown how much goes to the city and how much goes to the state.
Thank you.
It's almost like 80-20.
But a pimp can't be a pimp without a hoe. I mean, I hate to put it that way, but let's just be real about it.
Right. That's the truth behind it.
You know, Marcus.
Waiting for the first question. Y'all going in circle. I'm waiting for the first question.
We don't do interviews, bro. You come on in here, man. We at the barbershop in here, baby.
Okay. Just to piggyback on what the caller saying, the officer Joe was saying, a lot of this stuff was done by the police. Police themselves. And talking about these programs, I haven't read Mr. Rodriguez's article, but I kept on doing the dollar sign is because those guys, the top guys, they don't want to meet with the middle guys because they're going to take money to do these things. I live in Alabama, and probably one of the worst states in every negative statistic. Even policing, and all they don't. And I'm looking at education. It cost the war in Afghanistan $6 billion.
Mm-hmm.
We give the police department in the United States $100 billion a year. So you get what I'm saying? So it's a money thing. And why would I meet with the lower people, Mr. Rodriguez, and prove these urban areas so I can't send them to private prisons? It's a money thing.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying? I don't want to meet with OG Cal and help his community, because if I help his community, they're going to get on my neck for not putting enough bodies in these prisons.
Mm-hmm.
This is capitalism. And I made a theory. This is the pillars of white supremacy. And one of the strongest pillar is the justice system. If we try to defund the police, take money away from them, put it in the communities, put jobs in. We brought up Chicago. Let's talk about Chicago. And Nick Cannon said something profound. You want to start violence? You know one thing can stop a bullet? A job. Look at the city I'm in, Huntsville, Alabama, one of the top five cities, growing cities, one of the lowest crime rates. Because of what? Because of jobs. Everybody has a job, almost. You know what I'm saying? Those cities, South side of Chicago. I used to do ministry in East and West Side Detroit for 7.5 years. So John, I'm not a street dude, but I was in the streets. You get what I'm saying? And I know my limit. You know, I know that, I can't do this. They need an OG, Cal or John Ruffin to speak on this half because I'm not streets.
We're recognized.
So their voice. They boys got more impact than mine, but they the kids on the streets of Detroit respected me in them homeless shelters and the juvenile detention center because I actually sacrificed trying to talk to them. So, man, talking about that article, just going back to Mr. Rodriguez, we got to address the elephant in the room, and that's capitalism. Do I really want to help these communities? Do I really want to help the minority community? Do I really want them to come up? Why did they close all the factories in the 70s, in the late mid-60s and 70s in these communities? Detroit was a booming town. They closed all those factories in California, Detroit, Chicago, and all that. And that's when the crime rate went up.
Right. Let me do this before I go over to OG. You know, you mentioned something that was interesting to me. Several things, actually. You know, you talked about closing the jobs, and that's a whole nother show. We'll bring you for that. Gentrification, which I call antebellum reconstruction. That is a reality. Yes, it is about money. The men and women on the street, and I'm not speaking for them. I'm speaking for Stan. But the men and women on the street have been made out to be revenue generators. Produce statistics, write tickets, not problem solvers. Just be call workers so we can say at the end of the year, we worked X amount of calls. We didn't solve nobody's problem. But it looks good for the chief to say, we worked 10,535 calls last year. How many of those were repeat calls, chief? See, city council don't ask that question. How many problems did we solve? How much safer is our community? Not just a segment of where I live. And that is it. When you say money, you are hitting it right on the top, right, nail on the head. We got a chief over here that can't get money for having a decent community. We're dumping money down a barrel into communities that have no viable solutions coming from not just the officers you have working there, but from the citizens who live there. We've done shows talking about everything from jury selection all the way across the board. So, brother, you're hitting it right on the head. OG, let me go over to you, bro. What's your feeling? What you thinking?
Well, my take on it is it's just like you said, man. It's kind of like how the schools are. You know, they had lies and say this and say that, and the students is excellent and everybody's passed and all that to get the money, but they ain't really learning nothing. You know, and the same with the officers and you know the forces and stuff. They, you know, it's all about that money. So when it's all about that money, that's going to send people out working different. They're walking out the door with a different attitude because when you got to hit quota, you know what I mean, for the year and all that, you're going out giving tickets to people just on random just because y'all got to make the quarter. You know what I mean? That ain't cool, man. You know what I'm saying? And that goes with any part, you know, when it comes down to that. That's not cool. That's not cool. And I don't, you know, personally, man, I don't even really get so technical with a lot of that back and forth stuff because I got the ability to see game, and I know this ain't nothing but game. All of it ain't nothing but game. You know what I mean? Because all this stuff that's going on been going on all my life, 50 plus years, and before I was even born, and it's still going on today. So ain't shit going to change. We just got to learn how to deal with this shit and live through this shit because all the topics, all the this and all of that, Black Lives Matter, this, that, all this stuff in bingo. You know what I mean? They want to, you know, your title, Black Lives Matter. It's not you know, people look at it as a movement or whatever the case may be. We've been doing this for years. To me, it's a respective lifestyle. You got to be black to understand when it comes to Black Lives Matter. I don't know White Lives Matter because I'm not white. I don't know what it's like to wake up white and to live in the white world and all that. It's like they don't know what it's like to be black. You can assume it. In the hood and all that and this and that, but you don't know what it's like to live. You don't live there and never lived there. So when you start talking about Black Lives Matter, to me, all lives matter, always did and always will to me, all lives. So when you single it, sit out like that, you know what I mean? Like only Black Lives Matter, like why only Black Lives Matter since the door is closed? You know what I mean? No, it always matters. And movements play out. Movements go out of town, you know what I mean? Because don't you see it's quiet, it's starting to get quiet now. It was all over the floor, all this and that. Now it's starting to get quiet. Now it's about to find something else. The movements play out, you know what I'm saying? But this is a respected lifestyle. Like that don't go out of stand.
You know, Gene, when we say, though, can policing be saved? I'll tell you from personal experience, when I watch chiefs or commanders come into a room in a roll call and acknowledge that this officer wrote this many tickets this month. He's so great. And all us veterans are sitting on the back row. Tickets don't impress us.
Right.
We're out there. Well, it doesn't matter how blue we were at the beginning or whatever. You get to a point in your career where you see that retirement or whatever on the horizon. Some of us get there earlier than others. But you say, I want to solve some problems. I want to make a difference in the twilight of my career. And I hear these chiefs say that, but you know what? I don't hear any of these chiefs come in the roll calls and say,
what?
Officer so-and-so wrote 50 tickets last month. Officer so-and-so wrote 5, but burglary of a habitation was down. His car burglaries were down. Nobody got murdered in his beat. You know, we didn't have any shootings. The ag assaults were down. See, this is, if Stan comes out and works, whether I write tickets or whether I don't, tickets were never a big thing of mine. If I don't write any tickets, do you think that store owner cares when they come in and the $5,000 window's broken and $10,000 worth of property is missing, how many tickets I wrote that night? And that store owner, trust me, has got more pull with that city council, city manager, assistant city manager, and the chief, probably got a direct line that will call and light your ass up and Stan's not doing his job. Come on, Chief, I see you.
I'm going to speak to that because I'm a direct result of exactly what you're talking about. It took me, and not to blame any of my council members or anything like that, it's a cultural shift within the organization, the government. It took me about 7 years to change that, to get the focus away from ticket. Because it wasn't solving the problem. The only thing that a ticket or a citation solves or attempts to solve is traffic accidents or traffic crashes. And data can show you where you have your traffic crashes, and you should focus your traffic enforcement on moving violations. Not registration, not your inspection, but speeding, running stop signs, running red lights, safety violations. And so that's that. Texas is an administrative code. It's actually illegal for quotas, number one. Number two, illegal for me or a supervisor to even impart to an officer that they should write tickets. So you basically can be in violation of the law. I'm sure that it happens, sure. But we talk about this a lot on the show, about the problem solving, and that's the issue. Is what is it that we're doing that makes the community safe? What is it that we're doing to solve the problems? You know, we talked about your analogy of the people urinating in the park. Well, are there bathrooms in the park? Well, if they're not, let's start working on you putting a bathroom in the park.
Amen.
The kids walking down the middle of the street because there is no sidewalk. Why are we not building a sidewalk there? And that type of infrastructure is very expensive. I know because of my position and the size of my city, I'm fortunate to be part of those conversations. But when you start talking about roads and sidewalks, that's a lot of money. I hate to say it is a lot of money. So, but on the community policing. So I'm going to bring community policing up. I'm going to bring this thing up again. Community policing is different for every agency. Marcus said it's one of the biggest cities, and it's because they've got jobs and they're reinvesting in the community, and I'm a full believer of that. We're the 33rd safest city in the state of Texas, by the way, just throwing it out there because I'm proud of that. But
amen.
It's because it's reinvestment into the community. What is it that the government's supposed to be doing and the agency's supposed to be doing to get the reinvestment for it's safe, so you can have your business and not be robbed, for property crimes to be low. You know, we spend a lot of time. I'm so goofy on social media. I do this. It's the 9 p.m. routine. Every night I put out a social media post reminding people lock their damn cars, because 99% of our car burglaries is because people leave their damn cars unlocked and they got their purse sitting in there and their laptop and everything. But it's a reminder to the community that's a problem. It's a problem for us. So what do we do to solve that problem? And it goes beyond that scope. But, yeah, the cultural shift in law enforcement agencies and government has got to change. You cannot rely upon that citation revenue to try to build the budget. It doesn't work because too much of it goes to the state to begin with, at least in Texas. So it's not a true measure of what's to be done. And Stan, you're right, walking into roll call. If I get any council members listening, I apologize right now, but I'll take catching a burglary in progress.
Mm-hmm.
Is the equivalent of about 150 tickets to me. taking somebody's property or catching a bad guy robbing a convenience store, I don't even know how you measure that in 5 days. Saving a life. I mean, what's that number? That's the purpose. That's the reason. That's what we're supposed to be doing, right? Not ticket jockey. I mean, I can take anybody and treat them, teach them how to ride a ticket. I can do that. I can do that today. I'll take Izzy. I'll take Izzy out there. And we'll have him. I can do that. Couple hours. But we don't need that. I mean, there's a purpose and a reason behind it. But just to stop that, it's basically tickets are for prevention of traffic collisions and crashes. That's it. And I said, and if you don't believe me, fight on.
We also how the ticket ticketing in St. Louis resulted.
Yeah, Ferguson. Yeah, I mean, you do
the math. I mean, all those guys were just targeting black people, people of color, to write tickets so they can beautify their city.
So and we actually, in the Texas Police Chiefs, we do a continuing edge, and we have to go to a 4-hour school every 2 years. But we did a breakdown in Ferguson and what led up to the issues in Ferguson beyond Michael Brown, what was going on before that ever happened. And you're right. He wrote some crazy 20,000 tickets to 19,000 people who lived in the community. And the majority of them were pedestrians on the roadway where there was no sidewalk provided. I mean, to me, I want to feel cursed, y'all. What are you doing? What are you doing? So, I mean, as an administrator, and I don't know that guy, but he failed. They all failed. They all, I mean, that data, that information should have been going up to the chief. And that should have been seen. Well, what are we writing this ticket for? What's the problem? Well, I mean, again, I'm just...
No, Chief, let me...
I know we got more to talk about, but I could go on for... It was just ridiculous.
Let me do this. Because I'm real humble right now, and you know, when I'm putting together these shows, I'm calling Joe and Izzy, and we're bouncing stuff all over the place. I try to find people who, and I pay for this, so I'll say what I want to say, who Stan trust. Not because they agree with Stan, but you know, James Baldwin said, and I quote it all the time on the show, "I can't believe what you say because I see what you do." And when I look at the Waco I left, very conservative, basically nothing for people who lived there to do when I left. Nothing. There just wasn't. If you weren't into the rodeo thing and the cowboy thing, there wasn't nothing for you to do. Downtown.
Definitely.
Come on, baby, because I was about to bring you in, and I got to give a shout out first. I was going to put their logo on the thing, but I didn't ask. Keep Waco Loud. Take a minute, introduce yourself, and talk about Keep Waco Live. Why you do? Because what you do, when we talk about police reform and rebuilding our cities and our communities, you, to me, or for Stan personally, the one person that I look at that is in the community, that is changing things, and I'm so proud of you, and I was so thankful that you accepted it and said you would be here. So if you would, come on.
Hello, my name is Lelia Diane. I'm born and raised in Waco, Texas. My dad is a former officer of law enforcement here in Waco, so I am very different. I'm very humble. I've gotten to be a part of Keep Waco Loud. It is an organization that was started by Katie Selman and Jacob Green. It was to bring Waco to be a music friendly city like Austin, Nashville. But also I work at Classy Glass. I'm a big part of that. And my Stan had been to Classy Glass before. I understand before owners now and my involvement. My biggest goal, along with Carrie Johnson and JP Johnson and Neil Jimenez, our biggest goal was to bring diversity to downtown Waco. And we wanted to have a spot where you didn't hear just country music. You weren't going to go to the rodeo and come there for a drink and listen to country music and all the things. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but there was no diversity. There was no color. There was no fusion. There was nothing of that was being found. So before my involvement with People Like Go Loud and getting, you know, really close in with them, we just wanted locals and musicians, no matter what the genre, was to come to Plastiglass. And we completely changed the face of downtown Waco with 723 Austin Avenue. Plastiglass is known for diversity. Plastiglass is known for acceptance and equality. And our involvement with certain movements downtown, we were one of the sponsors for the Waco Women's March. Carrie Johnson stood by me. We had shirts made that said Marching Classy in support of organizations that are looked down upon here in Texas, such as Planned Parenthood. We had the big party after the march at Classy, and it was historically memorable for me because I've never seen any type of movement like that in Waco, and it was such an honor to be a part of that.
You know, dear, I got to say this and insert this, and this isn't any shot at the former owners or current owners or whatever of Plastiglass. But I can say I got invited there one day. It was not my personal choice of places to go. On my days off and somebody wanted to go somewhere, downtown Waco wasn't it, because it wasn't nothing there but Baylor people and Magnolia tourists. And I didn't feel like putting up with their BS, you know. So it just wasn't. But I got invited there. And this is before, you know, you guys did what you did when I was still there. That was the most anal-retentive, uptight, hasty, white, privileged, wine with the finger out. I'm in there in jeans and a pullover shirt. And I swore when I walked out, the people invited me. I was like, I don't have time for this. I swore I would never step in there again. So I think it's amazing for you guys to have gone to that place and transform that place into somewhere in downtown Waco where nobody goes there. And if you live in Waco, people who live there don't go down there. They go to, whether it's the Shame or, you know, they get away from the tourists. They get away from the Ritzy Country Club people because you see that crap all the time. And so for you to have done what you guys have done there and transform that place, that is a recipe for what a lot of people can do in a lot of cities to revitalize their downtown without sitting in council chambers and these endless, mindless meetings with a bunch of investors and bullshit that doesn't care about the people. So I applaud you.
Well, that's the thing. And, you know, it's like police reforming. You know, can it be redone? That's the question that you ask. And I really believe that it can, because I think it's more of this, like, this is my city, this is my badge, this is, you know, it's not about the ego. It's about investing in the people of your community. And it's a science, and it's compassion, and it is dedication to being involved with your city. It's not policing people, it's embracing people. And that is what has happened with Classy and Keep Waco Loud. It's embracing the local. It's embracing something we haven't heard of. It's embracing spoken word as the heart. You know, it comes from the heart of these people, and it's deep, and it means something to them, and it's being vulnerable. That, to me, has a lot to do with law enforcement. Like I told you, my dad was law enforcement for 40 years. And the thing is that he always told me is, like, you have to have respect for the people. It is respect for the people. You don't have a badge to go in there and kick down the door and you're going to listen to me. He was like, hey, we got a warrant. Get your shit together. Get a bail bondsman, come turn yourself in tomorrow. I don't want to say this in front of your family or your kids. It's respect. And that type of respect has been very disowned in what, from what I have seen locally, in Texas, nationwide. But, I mean, it sounds funny, but, I mean, something as simple as music and having a safe spot for every type of genre and every type of race right on Austin Avenue, it proves that there can be a positive change with color embracement and embracing something that you don't know. So, I mean, that's just my bit of it. I love my city, and I just want to see the change continue.
If you would, dear, just before I go to go back to Izzy, you, when you and I talked, and you shared something when you were describing inviting people to Classy. If you remember that conversation we had, and you invited a certain type of people who weren't really sure, older kind of, and they weren't really sure. And this is for people who say that all white people are bad or all black people are bad or nobody's ever going to change. Can you take a minute, tell that story, because you really surmised how I felt when I first went there. I could give a damn less about Classy Glass when I left out of there, you know, or downtown Waco. I just really could care less because there was nothing there for me. Tell that story, because that's amazing.
So just inviting people, you know, downtown that haven't been there, the best way that I can describe just telling a stranger, and they're like, well, what is Classy Glass about? And I was like, it's about embracing local. It's about embracing pretty much anything you can think of. I go, you're going to see live art. You're going to see art on our walls done by our artists here in Waco. You're going to hear music from people of all different genres, and we don't see, you know, and some people were like, well, I remember Classy Glass used to be, and I was like, well, we're different now. We don't see any color. We don't see any, I mean, sexual orientations aren't snubbed upon, and, you know, for a lot of people, that is just such a safe, you know, some people it freaks out because they don't know any better. They've never been, and because they stayed in their bubble. But people that have been iffy or even customers that we don't know that are from out of town, the tourists, they were a little, you know, by our open mic or whatever, they were a little shook, but they stayed, and they had such an appreciation because they were like, we've never seen anything like this. We've never heard anything like this. The diversity is what makes people stay because it's a harmony. It's, I mean, it really is. It sounds like a utopian freaking fairy tale, but it's a harmony. You see old people, you see young people, you see black people, you see Mexican people, you see preppy white people, all the things. And there's no hate. There's no, like, tension. There's nothing. It is just a harmony that you're going to experience. It's a small little piece of utopia for Waco. That's what I think. I think that's exactly what it is.
I appreciate you. Come on, Ed.
Well, I want to, Marcus shaking his head there a little bit ago.
I want Marcus to say, I'm very interested in Marcus.
You said Izzy. Go ahead, Izzy.
No, come on, Marcus. No, come on, bro.
See, here's the thing. I mean, Waco is probably similar to Huntsville, Alabama. I mean, it's not that big, it's not that small, whatever. But like I said, it's kind of hard. What you've done, diversity is nice, but that diversity, I'm from Alabama, and my dad and my grandparents participated in the civil rights era, so I hear all them stories, man. So that doesn't, I mean, what you're doing in Waco is nice, but that's not going to stop policing. That's just economics. Hell, I bring the Italians, bring the Russians, and I bring all Indians to do in my city if they're going to make money for me.
Yeah.
It's capitalism. You know, as before, it's segregation. You know, it's civil rights. After 1965, white people didn't want black people to intermingle with each other. Now they have no problem because why? It's dollars and cents. It's dollars and cents. So, but dollars and cents does not stop police brutality. It does not change policing. I mean, my city is booming too, but there I interviewed a family that killed an officer, an Army veteran. She had PTSD and schizophrenia. I mean, and we're the second or third highest city with PhDs because of Lockheed Martin, because of NASA.
because of Raytheon, because of all these people who come talking about it, is Redstone Arsenal. That's all the missiles and all that stuff made.
Let me inject.
Economics, I'm just to make it short, long story short, economics does not correct policing.
I think it does. And I'm going to tell you why I think it does. I'll agree and disagree because I think, let's take the economic part out of it. Let's just strip all that out. And I can tell you from my personal dealings with living in Waco, black people had nowhere to go. When the plan for a black club was out there, they're just going to open, there were plans in the police department to shut it down before it even opened. Let's throw that out there. So when you take a demographic of people who have nowhere to go, they're fed whatever narrative there is from an overflow or lack of or whatever of black leadership there, they're going to believe what they're told. When you have a city that is demographically South Waco's Hispanic, East Waco's black, and I don't want to make this all about Waco, but I'm just giving my experience on it. When there's nothing there to bring these people together to listen, oh, it's all the rich people's fault, and the rich people going, oh, that part of town is the black folks and it's poor. I think what they're doing is very important because before we can get to an economic discussion, we've got to get to a discussion. We've got to be able to listen to each other in a form, and right now, that's why this show is successful as it is. People can bring varying opinions, and we can talk about it. And what she did there is bring rich folks, poor folks, black folks, white folks, Hispanic folks, gay, straight, Christian, Muslim, Jew, whatever. All these people are in there having a good time. You don't think they're talking? And talk changes things. Come on, Chief.
I was going to say, I
come from my dad's a military guy, man. I'm done with talking. You know what I mean? It's good that it's getting diversified now, but how's that helping all those schools that were shut down in Detroit? That they shut down probably 100 schools in metropolitan cities. You get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying. I think the economics and singly will not do it, but it's part of the fact. It's part of the package.
Exactly.
And so in the context, I somewhat agree with you, Marcus, and singly just having economics influx into an area is not going to fix the problem nationally with law enforcement, but it's got to be part. To me, it's part of the package.
Gentrification is economics. All you're doing is the people, the land that has been, Birmingham, Alabama, is just being gentrified.
I
know you're not talking about. I'm trying to tie in pizza economics.
I understand. I don't really going into an old neighborhood, knocking it down, moving people because you want to build a new apartment complex. I'm talking about reinvestment in that community. They're existing there, and that's kind of what. And I don't know about. I mean, I know about Class, and it's just up the. It's the next city next to me. But she has kind of done that with that particular place. She didn't make it knock it down. She recreated. Mm-hmm. And I think that's cool. I think that's awesome to. And I never was there prior to, I guess, when Stan went, when it was a bunch of bees, boot scooting, which I don't like much about. But I never went there as a result of that. But, I mean, I think it's pretty awesome that you changed that from Lily White to multifaceted, multicultural across the spectrum. But Marcus, man, I'm not arguing with you.
Marcus, hang on a second. Go ahead, Lila.
But the thing is like with these organizations that we're trying to do locally, and I know it's a business, and I know it's been back in Magnolia Town, but the thing is like we're not Magnolia. We want to invest in on East Side. We want to connect with these people. We have so many young artists from East Waco, all North Waco, like all sorts of Waco. Like tonight we are having a huge concert, and it's not bringing in people. We're not inviting we're not going to close out, but this is a thing about locals who have been here, who have grown up here in the struggle, and, you know, they are looked at differently just because it's like, oh, you're not Magnolia, you're not this, you don't go to a private school, you don't go to Baylor. These are incredible young people here who have such a talent that we are trying to showcase. We are trying to showcase something that isn't trying to change the face of what Waco used to be. It's always been here. It's still here. And, like, tonight we're having these huge concerts featuring these young musicians from East Waco and on Elm Street. I mean, this is what we're trying to be about and trying to keep things, just create a peaceful setting in a neighborhood that is trying to be so changed and all the things for the look of Magnolia. But, I mean, those are the things that we're against. We don't want to tear down. We want to build up and restore. So that's just where we come from. That's just what our mindset is. It's not going to change. No, I don't think, like, having this little fairy tale, you know, what you probably think that I see is going to change policing nationwide. But when you hear and you're in our setting, there has been law enforcement and all the things. But it's like a shook hand. And it's small. Yeah, it's small, but it's a step. It's a type of thing, like, these kids that look like, oh, you could be troubled. You could be troubled. You know, it's like, gap in. They're shaking the hand. I mean, it's about community. Like, law enforcement has to be, like I said, to me, it's a human science. It's not, like, a protocol. It's a human science. And, you know, our little spot.
Could we circle this? I think we lost sight of how this discussion kicked off. The initial discussion was about, can policing be saved in the United States? And one of the parts of In the Doral's article was the redlining issue, which I wanted to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of what we're talking about in this segment actually addresses that issue of redlining.
Mm-hmm.
How do we police in those areas that have been denied those services, that have been denied the policing, the fire, or even educational services? I mean, we could circle down into charter school discussion and all that too. But if we look at this from the aspect, can we save U.S. policing? The answer is yes. I started off my conversation by saying this. I have more respect for the gang members than those guys who are wearing badges and trying to play both sides. I still stick by that.
I think that is the best statement I've heard. Yeah. I would stand by that 100%.
Refocusing the discussion back on the article, how do we save it and can we save it? I think that the discussion has to be, how do we eliminate those from the ranks of police officers who are trying to play both sides against the middle? How do we then also address the issue of the redlining issues of how do we bring those services back onto the level playing field? And how do we address the educational system? Now, you know, Marcus said, and I agree with some of what he said, but I disagree with a lot of other stuff. And that is this. Jobs are not going to stop what's going on in this country right now. It is just not going to do it. We've got to have a shift in the thought process of everybody. There's got to be a paradigm shift in how we police and who we police and how we respect those people who need those services. Now, does that mean we have to reshift the judicial system? Yes. See, this is
how you reshift that, though.
He didn't let me finish, but okay. The discussion has to start somewhere. It's just not a police issue. That's my problem. For you to say, or for anyone to say that it's just the police, you're out of your mind. The judicial system itself is corrupt as hell.
Agreed.
Remember this.
Agreed.
Police have to make the arrest. What's the next step? It's the judicial system. Now, if you want to reform policing, start with the judicial system. Everything that the police do has to come from somewhere else. You have to look at your legislators. You have to look at the city council. So now we're talking about an issue of voting.
Yay.
The B word.
We can go from there, Marcus. I see.
I get what you're saying. But Sandra Bland voted too, and we all know what happened to her.
What does it have to do with anything?
I'm just saying voting is part of it, but I hear what you're saying, but I don't think this, what you're saying that policing what's the initial topic? Can policing be corrected?
Three reforms.
balls to run for legislation and run for spots for judges and,
Amen.
You know, the district attorney places. They need to have the freaking, I'm sorry, they need to have the nuts to go against these people who pay money to get people off or, you know, let the popular or let the certain types of people in the community off. It's all about money and it's all about and be like, this is bullshit and actually convict. To me, that's a big thing. And going after these cops and everybody else and people in places of power that allow these things to walk. It's bullshit. You'll have a minor crime, and someone's in prison for how long? And then you have some big wig who is, you know, shot free off the bullshit. And people that need to get left in places of power.
We already know the dynamic behind it.
Go ahead, Marcus, real quick.
No, I'm just saying, real quick, we already know the dynamics, but we dancing around the elephants.
We're not dancing around the elephants because we talked about some of the elephant last week when we talked about the amount of people who don't sit on jury pools but want to blame the jury. When I sat in those jury pools in uniform and heard the conversation of how they're going to get out of it for whatever reason, OG, I'm going to come to you in a minute. Let me go to this caller, 314 area code 4600. Good morning.
Good morning, Stan. I wanted to comment on, I started off with two, but I heard two more, so that's four. Real quick, voting. You can vote for whoever you want to, and I'm not saying me personally, I'm telling you how it works. Vote all you want. We'll come in and buy your politicians right from under you. And that's what happens, because you've been talking about voting forever. Businesses control politicians. Money control politicians. Another thing, redlining. Redlining is useful. Why is that? Because it tells people where not to buy a home, where not to send your kids to school, and where not to drive and commute. It has to, because when you go to buy car insurance in a redlined area, why does it cost a whole lot more? Schools. The reason schools are closing is because you don't have the population. Because people are fleeing those areas, do not want to raise a family there. Would you agree to stand? And one other thing about the expungement of records. I hear people say, well, let's expunge their records. That don't make no difference. We know when you were born. We know when you went to school, to college. And then we have the right to ask, what have you done in the last 15 years? You're going to have to reveal it, because if you lie, then we throw your application away. Thank you.
Okay. All right, Joe.
You let another colonizer come on here and tell us and espouse some colonial bullshit. So I got no answer for that guy. I mean, he believes what he believes. He's a guy that's come to this country and has made good on the backs of everybody on this panel. So I've got nothing good for him. I'd rather listen to, you know, everything else but that guy. I'd rather go listen to Rush Limbaugh than what that guy did.
Well, you know something, Stan. Prove me wrong.
Okay.
This is the same guy that got on here and said redlining is good.
Yeah.
That slavery was good because it allowed Africa to get rid of all of its shit. And he wants to tell me about this place. Go back to where you came from.
Well, you know, with that, you know, that's a show here.
How about that smoke?
Everybody gets to come on and say how they feel. We don't limit, you know, y'all can call, and I love Joe Madison, probably my favorite. But, you know, you can call a lot of shows, and they'll give you 10 seconds, and they'll say thank you for calling, goodbye, and hang up. We don't do that here. You know, I want to circle back to Izzy real quick, because I mean, I'm feeling everybody. OG, I'm gonna get you, bro. I'm feeling everybody, but I'm, you know, and some of it is personal, because I've dealt with a lot of that crap that was in Waco, and for me, it is a breath of fresh air for me to see somebody where, and I knew, and y'all heard her talk in terms of East and South East Waco was predominantly black. And the city didn't put no resources over there, didn't care. South Waco was predominantly Hispanic before Magnolia. Now it's a bunch of tourists running around everywhere. North Waco was diverse, and West Waco was kind of your ritzy people, rich, wealthier people, whether they were black, white, or whatever. So, you know, I'm real, and I wonder here, because I don't think we can fairly dump all of this on policing. And when I talk about policing in the context of this conversation, I'm talking about the men and women that were out on the streets with me 25 years. I ain't talking about the detectives and the cadre to the chief and whoever pulls the chief's chair out for him and all those bullshit people that to me are police officers, their servants. But those servants out there in the community, those are the officers I'm talking about who predominantly and unfairly get shouldered with 80% of the bullshit that happens, they suffer for it. And there are a lot of good men and women out there that are doing the job, that do put on that uniform and go out there and put up with it, and they have no control. Marcus, I feel what you're saying, bro, but the men and women on the street, they ain't got no control over that. You're lucky if you see your chief 5 times a year in a roll call, especially on a midnight shift. Hello, personal experience. You're lucky. There are citizens who will see the chief more than the officers who work in that department under his or her direction on the midnight shift. That's all I'm going to talk about because that's all I know. Where you're going out there dealing with people who don't have a pot to piss in the window, throw it out of, and nobody to help them other than you. And for the midnight shift, you do build a bond with your citizens because there ain't nobody out there but 3 types of people: victims, suspects, and cops. And you meet people and you develop relationships with them, whether they're the good people or the bad people, because with you and our chief, Joe, y'all tell me if I'm wrong. Izzy, you've done enough interviews. This good and bad notion, when I see society say these people are bad people, those are some of the people I had the best relationships with. Those were the people who had my back when the brothers in blue turned and walked away and wouldn't speak. When the chief wasn't concerned about the issue until the right person got offended by it. Or the lawsuit was hitting their ass. That's real talk. So let me go. OG, come on, bro.
Yeah, well, as far as that policing thing go, it is a two-way street, though, you know what I mean? Because, you know, like I said earlier, you know, when you need a police officer, it's all good. But then when somebody do something wrong, it's, you know, they're, everybody said all the police as wrong, you know what I'm saying? And how that would change, I don't know, because that comes with, you got to be a certain type of person to even want to become an officer anyway, because you got to have it in you that you want to go and help people. That's the first thing, not you getting in it to kill people or get in the drug game or make money and all that kind of stuff like that. That you know, so when they examine people and go over applications and all that stuff like that, I don't know how people get around it. But once they get their uniform, it's up to other officers to expose them. And they, you know what I mean? That are doing right, you know, because we don't know what's going on behind closed doors. And they can do a lot of damage by the time the citizens even find out about mm-hmm. anything. It's a whole lot of damage that's been done. You know what I'm saying? So by the time he out here can expose a dirty, he can get a whole bunch of damage. You know what I'm saying? But just like here, where I live at here, my uncle, my dad's brother, he was a Hasbro police officer for many years. And everybody knew me and knew that was my uncle. You know? But, you know, it was the respect that they had and, you know, you earn that respect. I don't care what you do, you earn that respect.
Exactly.
Slimy, that's how you're going to get treated. I was watching this show with that one guy, Sticks. That guy's officer, Sticks, he went around and was on the street. That's what this one dude, man. This guy froze so bad, he's been on TV every day. It's one of them shows, one of them cops shows would be on TV, but he's been on in the studio ever since, though. So. But it's all about respect, though, with that, though, man. You know what I mean? And all up above us with the money, you don't know until it gets down to the end.
Hey, man, let me go, Chief. We're at the 25-minute mark. Go ahead, Chief.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to be quick. And I just want to hit a couple points, but OG Cal's 100% correct. And I want to say I sort of agree with Marcus a little bit. You know, does America want policing reform?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is because it's incumbent upon us as leaders in the agencies to seek out the people, to find out what they want. How they want their officers to police. I mean, what is it they want? That's the crux of community policing, right? And so Lulu, she's not in my city. She's up the road. But I tell you what, if I had the opportunity and those were the people that were living in my community, me and my officers would be at her place talking to those people. Because guess who those people are?
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that are wanting this.
Right.
So, you know, again, you've got to be a little bit creative and a little bit imaginative on how this is going to work and what we're going to do. Reform is coming. I'll tell you right now, some of the bills that are across this country, they suck. I'm telling you guys, you're not getting what you think you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
They're ridiculous.
Right.
Joe, Stan, you see, we've talked about this constantly. They suck. The issue where we talk about this reform and beliefs and sum it up real fast is that, you know, we're the low-hanging fruit. We're the organization that you can come get.
Right.
You can't go get the judge. You can't go get those people.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's because
they're
prosecutors, you know, but when we start talking about, you know, I keep hearing about qualified immunity and all this kind of, you know, let's end it for police. You know, are we going to end it for teachers? Are we going to end it for the other government officials? I mean, the ones that do have it. I mean, I get what people are trying to say, but I think it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. But to go back to Marcus, I agree. I mean, diametrically, I think we're opposed on some significant things. But you know, his opinion, I respect that. I got no problem with it. But it does start with the people. I mean, what do you want them? What do they want you to do? And again, if you're a good organization, you go find them. And that's why we have the things that we have, or the good agencies do. Because I'm not going to say I'm the only one. There's many good agencies across this country that are doing it right. And like OG said, it's up to us to get rid of them bad ones. I mean, we have got to have the intestinal fortitude to get rid of them. And Joe, I think you'll agree with me, but prosecute them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take across this country, for those of you who don't know, almost every attorney I've ever talked to or prosecutor, one of the things they always tell me is it's very hard to prosecute a police officer. Now, why that is, I don't know. There's some slam dunk cases I think that should have gone. We've seen some here recently that were pretty easy to do. But we as leaders in the organizations, change the organizational culture, use the citizens to change it, but get rid of the people that are not doing and carrying out the mission as defined by the people. That's all I got.
Let me add this to you. And a compliment to everyone on this panel, because the people that should be writing the laws are you guys. Marcus, OG, John, Ms. Lulu, Isidore, you are the guys that we should be responding to, not arguing with.
Mm-hmm.
The debate is not amongst us, but should be directed elsewhere in a unified voice. You're the guys. Pardon my language, Ms. Lulu. You're the motherfuckers that should be kicking their ass.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I love it.
Hey, Joe.
Come on, Big Joe.
You know, like, I agree with a lot of things that Marcus says. Like, I do, but I can't. It makes me angry when I think about things, but it's like, how am I going to change something in my community? How are we going to make a spot for people to feel safe to talk and talk to officers, you know, and other things? It's like, do I get mad? Hell yeah, I can get mad. But that's why I'm marked. That's why we speak up. And that's why we have this little fucking place in what sorry stuff is.
No, you're all right. Don't worry about it.
Not a word.
That's the only thing that we can do, or I can do here.
Well, I'm going to
get my law degree and all things. I don't know. Maybe that's
in
store for one day.
Just very quickly, that's a two-way street, because it's also incumbent upon us to come find you.
Yep.
And I'll say that. I have to come see you. We have to have that dialogue. Whether you're scared of it or not, whether I'm scared of it or not, we got to have that talk. I got to come find you.
Let me do this in the interest of time real quick. Because now we're going to go down the line, and I want to make sure I get everybody in and get everybody out proper. And Marcus, I want to make sure we get where people can go follow and you know, do you. But I'm going to say this. You know, I don't care about law degrees and Baylor and Harvard. And that's bullshit. It doesn't mean anything to me because I'll tell you what. Those of us without these high-level degrees, we didn't create this bullshit. People with degrees did. Everybody on here, everybody who's a victim, I don't care if you're black, white, green, purple, gay, straight, LGBTQ, atheist, Muslim, too, it doesn't matter. This system needs reform, not just policing, but like Joe said, the criminal justice system, the courts. It needs reform, and guess what? Ain't nobody running none of that with a degree. So as far as all the learned people know the way to go, guess what? I work with police officers who have masters and bachelors, and I'm a detective, and I went to all these great schools, and guess what? You still got to go to the hood to find out what's going on from somebody who don't even have a GED. So you know what? The difference between somebody with a whole bunch of knowledge and somebody with wisdom, the person with knowledge can tell you what happens when you hit the light switch and all the things that take place to produce light, but the person with wisdom can find the light switch. So let me go, OG, about a minute, bro. Come on.
My thing is, all I got to say to close out with, man, is we just got to put the neighbor back in the hood, man. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, do what we got to do, you know what I'm saying? Because things is going to be the way they are. That's bottom line, man. Things is going to be the way they are. And if we can just get people and talk and work things out, because it's all a lot of things. I ain't talking about no meet you one time and that it stuff. I ain't talking about that because when they start having all this voting and all this stuff like that, you know, you vote for people that you don't even really know. And then they talk some bad shit at the time, you know what I mean? But you say, oh, that sounds good, so I'm going to vote for them, you know what I mean? But then when they get in there, then it's like, you know, you don't hear from them no more. So it's like, you know, all that stuff, man, is this, you know, we just got to talk and stay communicated. But like I said, we got to put the neighbor back in the hood.
Oh, geez.
In the hood. It got to be back to the neighborhood, man.
I like that.
Appreciate you, bro. Stay by your phone, man. After the show, I'm a holler at you. And Lee Lou, I'm a holler at you. Lee, come on. Give us about a minute. Tell us what's going on, what's up, what you doing down there in class. What's your next? Where do you guys want to go? Next level.
Next level is our goal is, you know, I talked to Katie and Jacob, the founders. We want Waco to, as far as musically and all the things, we want everyone to come to Waco to see these locals. We want these locals to make it because there's such a talent. This isn't a once a month thing. This is a every Monday night, you know, our place, anybody's welcome. You know, this Class of Glass is a home for anybody. It's open. It's a safe spot. You know, you need help, we'll do it. Like, you know, we offer counseling during a couple of years ago when we had the Suicide Awareness Month. You know, we will offer resources. You know, Carrie, one of the owners, she is a doctor. She's an amazing human.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone needs help, like, that's the thing. It's not just a bar. It's not about making money. If it was about making money, we would have been gone a long time ago. This is about our community. This is about what can we do to help our community. Yeah, we serve wine. Yep, that's what we do. But we also bring a spot for people that don't have to pay for anything to come sit in there and show some talent.
And to that point, baby, if I can interject real quick, because, you know, we got listeners all over the world that are going to hear this. I want to make sure they understand. Cassie Glass is not located in the back alley next to a dumpster around the corner. This is probably some of the most expensive, high-end real estate in Waco, Texas right now. So when she talks about the owners, do not mistake where they are and what they're doing. They could easily cater to the elite.
We are right across the street from the Waco Hippodrome in between 7th and 8th Street on Austin Avenue. That is probably the biggest part of real estate besides the Magnolia side. I mean, this is Austin Avenue. This is downtown, right in the heart of it. So, no, it is. We are not catering to just the Pacific spot. And I encourage anybody that's close to me on a Monday night, get their ass to 723 Austin Avenue. Look it up. Like, see the videos that I take. Like, you are going to see the diversity and unity all at the same time. So I really do encourage anybody that loves local, that wants to support local, that all the things, this is the spot to do. Tonight we're having a huge concert in East Waco. We're doing it at nighttime in East Waco, and then we ain't scared. Like, we're all about it. It's gonna be a good time. So.
All right, dear. We appreciate you. Big Marcus, come on, bro. Take about a minute. Let us know what's up with Review, where people can find you. And dude, I appreciate you being here. Straight up. Thank you.
Once again, Stan, I appreciate you bringing me on the show. Before I go into my spiel, man, I just want to thank Officer Joseph and Jim for being the guys who they are. I know I'm very passionate on my side. I'm maybe a little bit pessimistic to most people. But, you know what I'm saying, you got to understand where I come from and what I've seen and what I have, interviews I have done. But I appreciate being police officers like yourselves that willing to talk to the community, willing to sit down across the table from me and try to implement laws to make it better off, better for everyone. And so we can respect the police officers. So continue to do the good work. And like I said, I look forward to it. I wouldn't mind linking up with y'all in the future. But Review Podcast, you can find it on Apple, Google, Spotify, and then even on YouTube. But you just type in the word Review, REVUKEE.
Which means, give us the breakdown again.
The breakdown of Review is reestablishing Black unity, knowledge, education, economics. We talked about this stuff, too. I had Stan on my show talking about police reform or die. I had him, and I had a lawyer, and I had the state representative of Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky, on my show. I had three facets. I had the law, I had a lawyer, and I had a representative. It takes all that to make change. Once again, check out Review on iHeartRadio, all the major listening apps, and you can listen to a couple of shows on YouTube. Once again, thank you, Sam.
Appreciate you, bro. Anytime. I'll be tagging you to come back because you know how we are here. We're hot button, man. And you feel
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. I really didn't get my foot in, man. I really didn't get you stopping, man. You can't stop it.
You know, well, you know, I mean, I tell you, we do 2 hours, man, and it goes quick. You know, and the Facebook Live was like, that's a whole other show over there. But let me get back and bring in Big John. You back yet? Everybody's like, John. Izzy. Okay, come on, John.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Come on, bro. Give us about a minute. And then Izzy, come on in after him.
Yes. Just two fundamental questions for me. And I guess the first one is reform policing going to change crime in the inner city? And the second question for me is, do the people want reform? Because, and these questions are related to each other, because in the beginning of the show, OG was talking about being on both sides, and you either on one side or the other. As a community, we can't continue to go on with this mentality of allowing murderers to live up under us, allowing drug dealers to live up under us, rapists to live up under us, and then talk about the police ain't doing shit in our community. What are we doing for our community? And I remember... And I'm going to shut up on this, Stan. I wish you would have got me earlier. I said in the Holy Quran one day, it says to give justice even if it's against yourself. And I really began to absorb that one verse, to give justice. What does it mean to give justice even if it's against yourself? Now, how can I expect to have a better community? And I got this thing that I'm protecting someone over here because I grew up with him. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, he's a serial rapist in my community. It's going to take brothers like Brother OG and myself to be real. And be real with those that came up looking up to us and telling them, say, yo, bro, you got to take charge of your community. You have to help clean up the community. The Jim Devlins, the Joe Mosley, the Stan Mason, they come in the community for 8 hours and they're gone. We live there. We're there 24 hours. And you allow students to sell drugs to children, to pregnant women, to old folks, and then you want to talk about what's going on in the community
there's not enough good policing. So cops come in, I'm not justifying, but there's a, cops become frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
I just locked this dude up a half an hour ago, and he's back out because the justice system is not doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not speaking for locking people up because I was in that environment. But I'm telling you to give justice even if it's against myself. So the justice is this. We sit back and we allow that stuff to take place in our community. And for the sister, I just want to say, and it's no disrespect to Marcus or anybody else, we have to fill our buckets wherever we are. If neither this nor that, it's a little bit of everything. Every bit counts. So if she's building a place where music is played, me personally, I'm tired of the singing and the entertainment. But whatever bit helps, I'm for it. And if whatever it is that you're trying to do, I'm for it. Giving justice even if it's against self. Peace.
All right, appreciate you, bro. Let me, Big Joe, before I go to his, Big Joe, come on, bro.
Well, this little bit is about, for something that OG just said, and I have to vehemently stand against it. Let's talk about accountability. If she said one of these guys talks good and we elect him, and he disappears, unelect that motherfucker. Quit playing. We talk about accountability for police. How about accountability? As John just said, accountability for self. All these guys depend on us. So when we send somebody that doesn't do our job or doesn't do what we want, get rid of them. They're as much of a plague as anyone else. But don't give them no pass because they got there one time. Get them out. No, I'm good. I'm sorry. And I'm coming to Waco. How about that?
Hey! He's coming with me. So we're going to make that ride, right?
We will.
I just want the video of that when you hit the dance floor. I just want the video.
Okay.
Against myself.
There you go. Hey, let's go over to Big Izzy, bro. Woman, did I hit the chief? Chief, you still there? Did I get the chief?
I'm always here.
Take a minute, bro. Come on, tell us what's going on, where you're at, what you got on the horizon. And once again, we, as the only police chief that consistently will come on, that is a co-host on the show and a part of the show, and speak up for what is right and what is true, and be open to anybody who calls the line to answer their questions. We appreciate you. We love you. And we love Miss Chief. And we love your mischief, but we love Miss Chief more. But come on.
I appreciate Marcus, the shout out. I mean, it's tough. But it's going to take all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, having some hard conversations across the table from one another, and whatever it is, we'll come to a middle ground somewhere and figure it out. I think Joe and I, we're kind of a little older than me, but we're in the same boat. We're kind of old school. But we also learned through our failures, much older, through our failures of law enforcement, of what works and doesn't. Going out and hammering a community doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Being a guardian of a community works. I've seen it from my career from South Dallas to Central Texas, where I'm at now. But being that guardian of a community and pushing that on to your staff is what makes the difference in solving problems. But again, it's a multifaceted approach. It takes everybody at the seat of the table to make those decisions, and we've got to look out for one another. I often say that this panel of the co-hosts, me, John Ruffin, you know, that we're not that supposed to exist. I love John Ruffin. John is an amazing brother. I mean, but by the chief, you heard his story. But you know what? I can go hang out with him. I got no problem whatsoever. He's an amazing man. So if I can sit here with the folks that come on this panel and answer those calls, then I'm 100% positive that we can make a difference in this country as far as this business is concerned. And again, I appreciate the time. Stan, thank you very much. Love you, brother.
Same here, Chief. Love you, bro.
Yo, love you too, buddy. And when you come to Waco, we got the barbecue. We're going to be doing a little, we'll be hanging out. Stop close. I mean, I'm just right down the road.
Aquarius.
Libra.
Well.
My COVID U.S. Police Academy.
There you go.
Business Police Academy shirt. So anyway.
All right.
That's it. I'm out. Get to Izzy.
Appreciate you, Keith. Izzy, come on, bro. 2 minutes. Once again, good article. When I pitched the pitch, you said all about me, man. I don't know. Yeah, sometime it is, bro. Thank you for keeping us motivated.
I appreciate everybody that comes on this panel. I appreciate the show. I wouldn't be able to do what I did. I do what I do without all of the resources and the sources that a lot of you on here put me in touch with. I can't speak about what I know. I can speak about what I've learned. In terms of what John talked about, when we talk about cleaning up these communities and everything, one of the things I addressed in the article that's very interesting is we need to start looking at substantive versus procedural justice. Procedural justice is saying that we can fix the problems of the community with more policing, more training, community policing, all of that stuff, just addressing the crime, whereas substantive justice solutions is all dealing with the causes of crime. So if you want to get drugs out of your community, you need to start asking, why are people doing the drugs, or why are the drugs in my community? Asking that next step question. And when it comes to asking those questions, organizations and movements like these are a small step in the right direction. And that's another side point, is that in this struggle, in this push for reform, a lot of the conversation is acting like it's going to be a switch. Not. It's going to be a long, slow process, and it always has been a long, slow process of reform. But movements like Lilu's are important because it brings people together having those conversations. And the step to take after that is, are those people having those conversations, involved in the conversations about policing? Are they on those community oversight committees? Are they on those civilian review boards? Are they at the city council? Are they engaged in that? Because one of the things that a lot of police leaders and a lot of community leaders tell me is that oftentimes when police say that they've spoken with a community panel or they have a civilian review board, people that are on those panels, aren't really representative of the community. They're owners, they're not renters. So that's the switch. You got to make sure those people are involved in those conversations. And then it does come down to money. Because another thing police leaders always tell me is that the money is there. And this conversation about taking it out of police and putting it into social services, one of the interesting things that was brought to me was that you can do both. There's enough money to do both. I mean, it got cut from the article, but if you go look at the, I'm not a big fan of them, the Rand Paul's yearly rundown of the amount of government spending waste that happens on federal and state level in this country, it is insanely infuriating. So there's a lot of waste, there's a lot of misspending going on, but there's money enough that you can fix these problems. And one of the things that a lot of police leaders say is that the first thing you have to do is get this money into the community to solve these social problems, and then we can start talking about fixing policing.
Appreciate you, Izzy. And you hit, and, you know, I want to do a show on Does America Want Police Reform? Marcus, you brought that up. We're going to do that show. You're going to come back for that one. But you brought up something when you start talking about money, Izz, before we get out of here. I'm going to tell people, you better be very careful when you start yelling that defund the police bullshit, because when you defund, you take that money out of the police budget. I can't speak for every municipality. I can talk about Waco. That money, I guarantee you, when it comes out of the police budget, it goes into the city's federal fund. That means the police don't have any control over that money. And I can guarantee you that once it goes into the city's general fund, it is not going to go into the POW program. It is not going to go into Citizens on Patrol. It is not going to go into an after-school program. They're going to tell you, well, you're going to have to submit your idea, and we'll vote on it, and we'll look at it next budget year. So when people ask you to yell defund, make sure you know what you're talking about. And if you're going to yell defund, carry your ass downtown and request a copy of the police budget. Sit down and read it so you are informed on what you're talking about, because you might learn something. So with that, you know, to all the guests, Lily, you better get me live on Classic Lab. I want to be on the first screen just to say, hey.
Hey, I'm ready.
But I appreciate everybody. Love you guys for being here. Shout out, of course, Waco, Texas, from beginning of this show. from the beginning, 25, 28 from now, but 25 years ago when I started, you all believed in me. You stood by me. You supported me. Love you. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, that's home. OG, we go back. Appreciate you, brother. When I called you, you told me I'm there. You didn't make no excuses. You didn't say, I don't know. You said, I got you. I'm there.
Right.
Chief, Joe, my midnight hour. I call Joe all hours of the night. Joe called me all hours of the night. I'm like, why don't you sleep? He's like, I ain't old enough.
Hugs for Joe. Hugs for Joe.
Yeah. Izzy, appreciate you. Hey, we didn't even do Joe's song today.
Aquarius. Libra.
You know,
Leo.
Oh, yeah. Play the song.
Play the song.
Aquarius. Libra. Leo. Cancer. Ralph. Charles. Paul. Larry.
Y'all don't know. Izzy, I appreciate you. We're going to get out. You know, Lilu, make sure you tell everybody down there that I miss them, love them. You know, I can't wait to come back and just pop in there. You ain't even going to know I'm coming. And I'm going to have, they're going to be like, damn, Stan brought his dad. You know, that's going to be Joe with me. You know, but we
no, Stan. No.
What up,
OG? That's a good thing too that the people can see that we land some joke too. You know what I mean? So,
oh yeah.
We get serious, but we land some joke. And I just wanted to say this one thing real quick. I can be reached on my name is up there. You know what I mean? On Facebook, Instagram, you can Google it, and what I do don't cost no money. I'm not an organization that gets loans and grants and all that. It's already paid for by God, so all you got to do is holler at me.